Karun Sanne. How are you all today? Brilliant. Okay. So before we start the sermon, let us take a moment to bring our palms together in veneration to the Supreme One, the Enlightened One, He who is our Master, our Guide Light, the One who showed us the path to liberation, our Teacher, our Master, the Supremely Enlightened, Lord Buddha. Let us chant the Namaskara 3 times to pay our homage to the Perfect One.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
You know, there's a Dhammapada stanza that goes, Sabbadanam dhammadanam jinati, Sabbaraso dhammaraso jinati. So why do they say sabbadhanam dhammadhanam jinati? Why is the dhammadana? So what it means is, out of all the other dana, which is out of all the other offerings, all the other givings, dhammadana is it comes up. It is the foremost dana. It is the best thing that you could ever give. It wins out of all the dana, all the other dana. Sabbadana means all the other dana. Dhammadana and jinati means dhammadana wins out of all the other dana. It is the foremost, it is the best dana to give. It is the best thing to give. Why do you think is that? What are the other things that you give? So you could give food. So usually when you say a dana, what you mean is food, right? Mainly people give food. You like to give food. I mean, it is a natural not natural tendency, but we feel that when we give food, we feel very pleased about it. We like to see other people eat, and we like to give others to eat. When someone comes to our house, what do? We give them food. We ask them all the time, have you eaten? That is the first thing we ask. Would you like to eat something? When someone comes to our house, that is our hospitality. So they say that Sri Lanka is it's best known for its hospitality, right? So the pearl of the Indian Ocean. So they say that, right? Why? Because we like to see other people eat. We like to give food. So that is one thing that you give. What about the other things? Clothes. Sorry? Medicine. Medicine. That is another thing that you give. So you give these different types of things, and you have food, you give clothes, you give medicine, you give shelter. So all these things you give. But who benefits out of these things? Or in fact, what benefit out of these things? All the other things that you give. For example, food. What benefits out of food? The body. What about clothes? Again, the body. What about shelter? Again, the body. What about medicine? Again, the body. So these are the main things that are considered to give, right? So sometimes we hear that there are refugee camps and people ask for donations. And there are many organizations, good organizations. What they do is they gather together, and then they make foundations, and they collect funds to give to people in the when there are crises in this world. So when there are terrorist attacks going on in the world, then they collect. And there are many organizations, they do that. They collect donations, they collect funds, and then they donate. They make food parcels, and then they donate. These are very good things that happens around the world. But how come Dhammadana be foremost among all of that? Because Dhammadana is given to the mind. All the other dana are given to the body. But why? Why giving to the mind is the best thing to do? Because it is the best thing that you can get, yes. But why is it the best thing? Only the mind can attain Nibbana, yes. But why? Why is it the best thing? Why do you give? You give because you like to see purpose, right? If there's a good why, so for example, let's say there's a group, what they do is, they make, let's say, weapons, right? They make weapons. Now, what are weapons used for? Healing this world or hurting this world? Hurting this world. And there's another group, there's another organization, where they make medicine. What do medicine do? They heal the world, right? So if I ask you that you have two options to give, let's say you have your money and you want to donate it somewhere, and you have these two organizations. You have the organization which makes medicine, you have the other organization which makes weapons. Which organization would you opt for? Would you choose to give? Probably the organization which makes medicine, right? Why? Because you see more purpose there. You see a good why there. You see a good intention there. Right? So you see, medicine heals people. Medicine cures illnesses. Therefore, if I give to this organization, they would do more good than the other company, than the other organization. Why? Because they have a good intention. They have a strong why. They have a good why. They're continuing their organization. You see that. That is why you give to that organization. So you see purpose there. You see a good purpose, right? But what is the purpose of giving food to the body? You give health. You give strength. You give energy to the body. But how long does that last? So let's say you feed someone today. How long does it last? How long does it last? It doesn't last till you live, right? If you don't eat for 7 days, what happens? You die. So that's that's the most that it would last, right? Say someone eats a meal today and then stays for 7 days. You need to give them again. So to anyone, if you give food, what happens is the power of it just reduces over time. The energy of that food just reduces over time. So there's very little purpose of giving food compared to the other. We will come to that. Because you can't give food and finish it and end it. You have to keep giving food. Because if you give food to a body, then the next day also the body will ask for food. The next day, again it will ask for food. This is not to say that not to eat, but you have to give the body food. You have to give food to others as well. But you earn merits out of it nonetheless. But what I'm saying is that you see purpose there. Giving food to the body, there is a purpose, but let's take the other example as well. What about giving clothes? How long would it last? until they wear and tear, right? And what about shelter? So all these things, medicine as well, all these things you give to the body. When you give to the body, let's say, okay, you maintain someone. You take someone, let's say, there are organizations where you can actually sponsor for a child. And then you can keep on giving the facilities that are needed for, you can sponsor for that child. All the facilities that are required for the development of that child, right? So let's say you take someone like that, you start to sponsor someone like that, and then you start giving. So you give, and then give, and then give all the things that are needed for the body. And then that child grows up, and then he lives his life, and then towards the end of his life, he dies. He leaves his world. And then again, what happens to that child? He gets born again with a body. So, did you complete giving to that body? Is that the end? No. Again, you give. The same with education. So, people live in this life. They are born and then they educate themselves. They get a PhD maybe, and then they die. In their next life, they have to go to preschool again. So these are things that you can give. You earn merits out of this. But the only problem being that these are things that you can never give and finish. There's no end to this giving. So the purpose is very, very small. But of course, you can earn tremendous amount of merits out of this. But think about Dhamma Dana. What happens when you give the Dhamma to a mind? You can heal that mind. And then there is an end to it. That is why Dhamma Dana is very strong. That is why there's a huge purpose behind Dhamma Dana. Because there is an end to it. There is an end to Dhamma Dana. You can give the Dhamma and heal a mind. That's it. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. That is it. That mind is healed after that. That is what you call Dhamma Dana. But if you give to a body, then there is no end to it. You can keep on giving. That will never be finished. So that is why I feel that Sapadanam Dhammadanam Jinati, why the Dhamma, giving the Dhamma, is the best thing in this world to do. That is a big chance that you get. That is a huge opportunity that you get. So if you have children, give them the Dhamma. That is the best thing that you can give to them. Of course, you should give them education, you should give them food, shelter, and all of the other things. But alongside that, give the Dhamma. Because that is the best thing that you could ever give to a person. Because that is the only thing that will heal a mind. Because there's no other thing that could heal a mind. So, in the Brahma, I think not Brahma Jala Sutta, in the Agganya Sutta, we have heard that there's this Brahma. So people started as a Brahma who feeds on happiness in the sense he's on light. So he creates his own light, and then he feeds on that light. So that light is created by He's on energy, so he's on karma and vipaka, right? So he feeds on that. And then it all starts from there. And then he comes down to this earth because he smells that this earth has a nice, it's like yogurt, it's like curd, a very very sweet curd. He smells that. It's just like when you're in the living room, when your mother's cooking a good food, you're attracted to the kitchen, right? It is just like that. So these Brahmas, so how these Brahmas were born there, there's another big story about it, but I'll explain briefly. So it is said that when this world ends, that all the planes, which the human realm and the Deva realm, and up to the Brahma realm called the Abhasara, all those realms get destroyed when this world ends. So if there are animals who still have the visa to stay in this earth, would go to the Brahma realm. So even if it's an animal, it's a good chance. Even if it's an animal, they would get thrown to the Brahma world, because there is no other place to be born in. So if you take the karma record book, maybe they have karma to be born as a Brahma. But currently they don't have the environment. So when the Brahma world is the only environment that exists, then those vipaka should come into fruition, because that is the environment that is there. So it's very logical. Although it sounds like a fairy tale, it is very logical. Always vipaka come into fruition according to an environment. So when all the other planes are destroyed, only the Brahma plane exists, then those vipaka has to come into fruition. No other vipaka can come into fruition, because he was a dog. But dog vipakas can't come into fruition, because there's no environment for it. So therefore, the only environment that exists currently is the Brahma realm. So therefore, they go and be born as a Brahma. So they stay there for a while, and then what happens is this world starts creating little by little. And when this world starts to create, it creates a sweet curd, like yogurt. So this is very sweet, according to the Tripitaka. This is very sweet, and it's like yogurt. So yogurt is very sweet. So, and you can smell it. So it is said that that fragrance of the yogurt, that aroma, goes up to the Brahma realm. And now, who's in the Brahma realm? There are a few types, in the sense that there are Brahmas who went there because they developed their mind up to that level. They developed their mind up to the Brahma level. But there are also other Brahmas that were born there because there is no other environment to be born in. So they were born as a Brahma. That's like winning the lottery. So Guru Hamdur explains that there is a big difference between winning the lottery and becoming a billionaire, right? Why? Because when you become a billionaire, you put your hard work into it, you put your effort into it, and you work very hard towards it, and then you earn a million. And you have the mindset of a millionaire. Now what happens when you win a lottery? It is spontaneous. It's all of a sudden. You don't have the mindset of a millionaire when you win the lottery, most of the time. So therefore, your mindset might be less than a million. So therefore, you'd keep bringing it down to that mindset, that the money level of that mindset. But the mindset of a millionaire, he has the mindset of a millionaire. So he has the mindset to keep that million in his bank account, or a billionaire. He has the mindset to keep that billion in his bank account. And then he works towards investing and making up for that money. He maintains that level because he has the mindset of a millionaire. But then if someone wins a lottery, he doesn't have that. It's just spontaneous. So he would just spend all the money and then again come to the same level that he was in. So That is the difference. So just like that, there are two types of Brahmins now. The Brahmins who developed their minds up to that level and then went up there. So they don't have, they have raga, dvesha and moha, but it is very less. Most of it is compressed. Because they did meditation and all that during their lives in lives as a human, and then they went to the Brahma world. But the other Brahmas who were born there, because there is no other environment to be born in, maybe they were dogs, maybe they were the other types of animals and other types of beings, and they're gone and born there, and then they still have those raga, dvesha and moha more than the other Brahmas. So what happens when they smell the aroma of the yogurt? The Brahmas who have developed their minds, their raga, dvesha and moha cannot be aroused. But the other Brahmas, their raga, dvesha and moha can be aroused because they didn't suppress it. Nor did they eradicate it. So therefore, they start slowly coming down to earth to see what this smell is. Just as the same way that your mom was trying to surprise you by cooking something good, but then, because the aroma went around the house, you attracted to the kitchen. So then you found out what it is. So just like that, these Brahmas, they start slowly coming down to earth. When they start slowly coming down to earth, they see this yogurt. And now, they want to... The smell is not enough. Now they want to taste it. So they start eating off the ground. Now, the point that... I'm not explaining the Aghanya Sutra today. But the point that I want to make is that... What we learned from our teachers is that... They ate it off the ground. They ate the ground directly. The ground is what they ate. It was that easy. If they need food, they ate it off the ground. But just think about what you do when you want food. What do you have to do when you want food? Can you eat it off the ground? Is that easy? Is it that easy? Yes. And you have to go to the shop and then buy food and then prepare it and then serve it and then eat it. But to go to the shop, you need to have money. Otherwise, the shop wouldn't give you. So to go to the shop, you need to have money. And then to earn money, you need to do a job. To do a job, you need to have qualifications. For qualifications, you need education. For education, you need to go to school. See how many things you have to do today to eat it off the ground. Where you had the chance to eat it off the ground, but just think how many things that you have to do today to eat. What about shelter? The Brahmins don't need shelter. They don't need shelter. Because they don't get sick I don't know whether they can get wet in the rain, but they don't get wet in the rain. So they don't need shelter. But today, you need shelter for protection. Because they don't have a thick body like we do. They don't have such a dense body. That's why we can't even see them even if they come down to earth. So they don't have such a dense body. So therefore, they don't need shelter. But today, we need shelter. To get shelter, we need money. To get money, we need a job. To get a job, we need education. To get education, we need to go to school and dot, dot, dot. The story continues. And then, what about medication? Brahmins don't need medicine. They don't need medicine. because their bodies don't get ill, apparently. But for us, we get ill all the time. Even if we step outside on a cold day, we get a runny nose. If there's mist around us, then we get the cold. If there is pollen in the air or dust in the air, we get hay fever. And then we have to take all sorts of types of pills and medications and all that, and to give to this body. So just think about all these things that we need to sustain our body, just our body. And to get all of those, we need to go an extra mile to do all the things that we do today. That is why you got a job. That is why first when you were born, when you were at the age of 5, your mother told you to go to preschool, Puta, because you need to educate yourself. You need to learn. Why? Because when you grow up, you need to get a good job. Why? Because then you can earn money. Why? Because Amma and Tati wouldn't be here for you when you grow up. So therefore, you should get a good job to earn a lot of money, and then to do the things that you need in life. To get food, shelter, to get food, shelter, and medicine, and clothes. To get all of these things, you need money. Otherwise, no one will give them to you. So therefore, at the age of 5, you were put into the preschool. And then came grade 1, then 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then O-levels, A-levels, and then university, and then graduated. After that, jobs, and you're living like that today. So just think how far you had to go to get food to eat when you had the chance to eat it off the ground. But the irony of it is, today you say you eat food, right? So back then as well, they ate it off the ground. But then little by little, their attachment towards this increased. They wanted more. Just having a little was not enough. Therefore, that energy was released into the universe. Because with every thought that is created, that should release energy to the universe. I'll explain when I explain about the mind. So that is what creates this whole world. That is what creates everything around you. That is what creates the trees, the earth, and everything. That is what creates them. So, when these Brahmas wanted more, what happened? Then, this earth didn't stay as curd. It started growing some kind of vines, I think, or moss, stuff like that. And then, it didn't stop there. This moss is called Badalata. That is what it's referred as. So, and then it didn't stop there. And then the attachment increased, and then people wanted more of it, and then it started growing as rice. It's called alvi in Sinhalese. So it started growing rice on the ground. Now they can no longer eat the ground. Now they need to eat the rice that grows on the fields, and for that they need to wait till it grows. They can't eat whenever they want. But back then, they had the chance to eat it off the ground whenever they wanted. Whenever they're hungry, they just have to take it off the ground, eat it. But now, they have to wait till it grows. But then, again, people wanted more. So what did they do? One genius guy came up with a brilliant idea. Why do we have to go and bring every single meal all the time? What if we cut the grains And we take all the things that we need for a whole day and then keep it inside our house. So then people would go, and because this wheat or this rice would be grown, which is enough for everyone. But then these genius people, what they did was they went and brought rice, which is more than enough for them for one meal. But the rice was grown for everyone to grow, for everyone to eat one meal at a time. So that means they had to take the stuff that is not owned, but that is there for everyone. They took stuff that is there for everyone for themselves, and then they stored it up. And then others got to know this. They also started to do this. Now, the category is split into two. The people who have stored it in their storages, and then when lots of people do that, there would be a group who has nothing, wouldn't there? Because this rice was there. It was grown for everyone. If it was grown for 100 people, if 20 people take the things that are there for the other 80, then, or if 80 people take that are there for the other 20, then 20 people would be left with nothing. So therefore, these 20, what did they do? These numbers are just to make an example, but these 20, what did they do? They came up with the brilliant idea of stealing. That's when stealing was born. But the Brahmas didn't want to steal. They lived on their own energy. They lived on their own light at first. But then slowly it came down to stealing. And the others, they slowly came down to storing. So when they started storing, the others started to steal. But when someone comes to steal from my storage, then what do I have to do to him? I have to protect my storage. I can't let him in. Therefore, I have to fight him. But if he keeps on coming, then I have to get rid of him. There comes killing. So, this is how the story started. It is very logical, isn't it? But the irony of it is, what do you eat today? You still eat rice. You eat rice. Or you eat whatever the forms of things which are grown on the ground. But today you say that you have the chance to eat processed food. You can eat processed food. You can eat fruits. Is it too warm inside? No. Okay. So, you have the chance to eat processed food. But all of those has to go take place. Why? Because you can't eat it off the ground. But unfortunately, the irony of it is, what is an apple? What creates an apple? The tree. What creates the tree? The earth. So what goes into the apple? The nutrients from the soil. We learned this for photosynthesis in grade 3 science. So what creates the fruit? Still the earth. But now today you can't eat the earth as it is. Because of that, it has to come in a different form. But nonetheless, you still eat the earth. You're still eating the earth. But today it has to come in a different form. Why? Because people's attachment slowly from back there grew little by little by little by little. And then today it has grown into a massive complex cobweb. Raga has grown into a massive complex cobweb. So today you can't actually trace back a single root which goes back to the Brahma, because it expanded like a tree, like a tree diagram. It expanded like a mesh. It expanded like a cobweb. How many paths are there so if you have seen, have you all seen a cobweb? So if you've seen a cobweb, how many paths are there from one end to the other end? Many paths. Many ways to go from one end to the other end. So just like that, this raga has become like that today. It is a whole cobweb. You can't trace back a single root to the origin. It has developed like a very massive mesh. So just think about how complex people's lives are today. So one day we discussed about why people used to share goods back then, rather than having money. Because they knew about how this world works. So just like that, this people's life have become very complex. But although it has become like that, we tend to feel that it is because we have money we can buy comfort for us. But that is not so. People feel that we have an aircon in our house because we have money. And that is what you're taught. Weren't you? When you were little, you were taught that, Puta, you need to earn. You need to get a good job. Why? Because you can live a luxurious life. If you need a luxurious life, then you need a lot of money. You need a high-paying job. So therefore, you need to learn these things. You need to learn math, science, and physics. You need to learn this, and that. And then you need to get a good job. And sometimes, if you wanted to be someone, let's say when you were little, you had the ambition to be someone else. But then your parents carved that into what they wanted for you to become. They said, no, Puta, you shouldn't do that. You should be a doctor. They carved that for you. No, Puta, you shouldn't be that. You should be an engineer. You should be a pilot. They told you what to become. They told you what to do in your future. Most of the time. This is what happened. So, in a very such young age, it has been put to your head that it is money that does everything in this world. It is money that will bring you comfort. It is money that will bring the things that, it is money that will bring a luxurious life. But unfortunately, it is not so. It is not so. So is it money that brings an aircon into your life? Is it money that brings you food to eat? If it is so, just think about it. Currently, you're in an aircon. What did you pay? How much did you pay? You didn't pay anything. You didn't pay anything. So it is not money that makes you be in an aircon. What about for the Swaminarayanas? Is it money that gives you travel? The ability to travel from one place to the other? To get a car? I mean, that is the purpose of a car, right? So if the Swaminarayanas want to go somewhere, we just need to tell you. And many people would come up and say, Swaminarayanas, we'll drop you. So is it money? How much did we have to pay? What about food? You have to earn for yourself. But how much does the Swaminarayanas earn? We just have to take our alms bowl and just walk a few steps. And then the alms bowl is filled. How much did we pay? So it is not money that brings you food. What about medication? You have to go to the doctor. But we just have to tell you. So is it money then? I'm just emphasizing the point that it is not money that does things in this world. There is something other than that. Although people have developed this idea that it is everything is around money. No, no, no. Didn't things exist before money come into this world? Didn't food exist before money come into this world? But today, there's this idea that if you have money, you can eat. That is not so. Just think about it. What about the refugee camps? How much do they pay? They don't pay anything. But they get food. Is it because of money? They get shelter. Is it because of money? No. They don't pay anything. So even you, when you're at the monastery, how much do you pay to get food? Nothing. You just have to go there and then hold your plate and then you get served. How much do you pay for that? For that luxury service. You just have to go with a plate and then they serve you. Maybe even they wash your hand. If it's a Swaminanda, then they serve you, they wash your hand. First they invite you. Out of compassion, come to this place and take alms. They invite you first. And then they offer you. And then they wash your hand. And then they worship you as well. Please eat. And if the Swaminas didn't eat, then you're upset. So therefore, you worship and tell, you beg the Swaminas, please eat. Please eat the food that I have prepared. How much did the Swaminas pay that person? Do you get that 7-star service in a 7-star hotel? Maybe they usher you to a seat. And then they show you the buffet. And then you have to serve yourself. Sometimes there are people who serve. So is it money that does everything? It is not money. Everything in this world is not because of money. Money is just... it's just another part of the environment. But you don't get things because of money. You get things because you have given them. That is what we need to teach people. This is the fundamental concept that we need to understand. What we give is what we get. Give and you shall get. What we give is what we get. This is the fundamental concept that we need to understand. The concept of karma and vipaka. This is the first step towards stepping towards the fruit of samadhitti. This is called the kammasagata samadhitti. The belief in karma and vipaka, that what you do is what you receive, that what you do is what you reap. It is always like that. Because when you start believing in that, that is when you start nibbana. In the sense that, that is when you start to understand that everything, every mind is made by vipaka. Before going there, we need to understand every experience that I experience today is because of the things that I have given. As a result of the things that I have given, an experience is formed in this world. And that experience is the experience which is yours. That might not be my experience because it is not my vipaka. If I show this to you, people here would see this in different colors. Although everyone might call it red, but who knows whether you're seeing the same thing as me, whether you're seeing the same thing as I do. How can you clarify it? There's never a way to clarify it. But what do we do when we are cooking food? What do we do? to taste whether to check whether the porridge or the gravy has enough salt, what do? We take a little and then taste it. Then what do you do? What do you tell the next person? Can you also check, please? But how do you know whether they're getting the same taste as you do? I can remember my attam. when she got very old, right? So attamma is my grandmother. So when she got very old, she couldn't taste spice. So it has to be very extremely spicy for someone to for her to taste it. But if we eat a little bit of that, it'll be burning our tongues. So then, every single day, Attam used to complain that the gravy is not enough. It's not spicy enough. She used to complain every single day, and then my mom would just put more spice into the gravy every single day. And then there came a point where we can't eat because we were children back then. So we can't eat because it was too spicy for us. Then we started complaining our mother. Because no matter how much spice you put into that, no matter how much chili you put into that, it wasn't spicy enough. So then Attamma my mom made a lunumiris for Attamma, which none of us could eat because it was that spicy. It was very hot. One day Attamma called me and then said that, "Bhuta, have a bite from, so I'll mix it for you." So we get, so when you go to Attamma, so she usually feeds us. So then I forgot that she was given this lunumiris. So I went near her and then she said, "Today everything is very good." And then I thought, I forgot about this spice thing. And then I thought, okay, then she gave me a bite. And then I was running around the house because it was too spicy. I was searching for water. So just think about it. It is Attamma Svipaka that was coming to her. But the same spice, the same curry was not spicy for her, but it was spicy for us. But the tongue had to play a role there. Maybe when she grew old, maybe the spice receptors, or the receptors which are there for capsin, maybe they deteriorated, or maybe they got damaged when she's growing old. So, therefore, Attamma couldn't taste spice as much as we did. So even with a little bit of spice, we tasted it. But for her, she needed a lot. She needed a lot to trigger the receptors in her tongue. But nonetheless, even though it was receptors or not, but she's receiving her own vipaka. The things that she'd given. Nothing else. That's why we tasted differently. Because we were receiving our own vipaka and she was receiving her own vipaka. Because that's how a mind is formed. So last week we discussed that a mind is made by receiving, then registering, responding, or recognizing, responding, and perceiving. We learned that this is the process of the mind. First, it receives the stimulus. And then it recognizes it. Sorry, it registers it. And then it recognizes it. And then it responds to it. And then perceives it. So all these things have to happen for the mind to perceive. So we discussed that if it doesn't perceive, then everything would happen, but it's just that the thing that we talk as the thing that we know about consciousness wouldn't be there. This is when you become conscious. At the time of perception, that's when you become conscious. That is what you call consciousness. Just think about it. If I drop this pen from here, if I drop this pen, what if? So we know that. So when there's lightning, what do we see first? We see the light, and then comes the sound, the thunder. But what happens when there's a giant thunder all of a sudden? We take our legs up, right? But when thunder comes, lightning already happened. So although we take our legs up, if that lightning struck us, then we wouldn't have time to take our legs up. So we get scared of the sound. But we need to know that sound comes later. So what if we switch these two things around? We switch sound, or the speed of sound and the speed of light. So Sir Albert Einstein has said that is why everything is related to light. It's relative to light. Because that is the fastest thing that they have found as a particle. That is the fastest thing as a particle that they have found, which is a photon. That's why everything is relative to light. Because we perceive relative to light. We see the world relative to light. But unfortunately, we don't perceive relative to light. We perceive relative to the mind. That is the fastest thing. I mean, you can't call it fastest, because for there to be speed, there should be something that goes through time. But the mind is not like that. So, although Sir Albert Einstein said that the fastest thing is the light and we perceive relative to it, haven't there been times where you see things but you think of many things at the back of your head? I mean, lots of time it happens. It happens all the time, actually. You see what you're seeing, but then many thoughts. Just think about when you're watching news or when you're watching a movie. Don't you think of all the other things? When you're driving, don't you think of the other things that let's say you have a business, you have a meeting. So you have to drive to work, and at work you have a meeting. Don't you just think about all the things that you could? Don't you go through the things that you need to discuss in the meeting? You do. So, but you're driving. What you're seeing is the road. So if everything was relative to light, then how come you think about those things? You should be think related to what you're seeing. But that is not so. You're thinking about a meeting. But you're driving. What about when you're eating? You think of all the different things in the world when you're eating. You're not just thinking related to what you eat. So that is not only your perception. Your perception happens relative to all the thoughts. Your cognitive process. That is your mind. So, therefore, we discuss that when the mind receives a stimulus, it recognizes it. So it registers it first. So, for example, we took the example of seeing your mother. So you're hearing your doorbell or a knock on the door, and then you go to the eye hole or the eyepiece, and then you check from that, and then you see your mom. So you received the knock, and then you registered it as that event, and then you recognized it as your mom, and then you respond as opening the door, and then you perceived all of it. So here, in this example as well, we need to understand that we actually perceive every single event here, right? In the example, we know that when a knock on the door, it is a knock on the door. It's not simply an event that happened and we don't know it yet. It is not like that. We have already perceived it when I say a knock on the door. You have perceived the knock on the door. When I say that you recognize your mother, you have perceived that as well. But in the mind, it does not happen like that. It happens because of this. This happens because of this. Recognition happens because receiving a stimulus. Response happens because receiving a stimulus. It doesn't matter whether you perceive or not. These things happen because it received the stimulus. That's where views come into place. So for example, so let's say you're cooking something, you want to boil something. What do? You heat it up, and then, unlike other curries or whatever, you have to close the lid for it to boil. Yes? So, closing the lid after putting it to boil, it is something that you know. It is a view that you have. Right? And then there are different other views that you know of. The things that the household, that happens in the household chores. Right? So when you leave a room, you have the view to switch off the light. But let's say it's a child. He doesn't know that he needs to switch off the light. Every room that he goes into, he keeps the light on and come back. But then when you put the view into their head, that Buddha, you need to switch off the light because we need to save energy into this world. When you put that view into their head, now every single time they leave a room, you'll have to remind them a couple of times, a few times, and then every time they leave a room, then after that, they switch off the light. Why? Is it because you told the child to switch off the light when they leave the room? Or you gave them a view which activates on a certain stimulus, which activates on the reception of a certain stimulus, which is leaving the room. So, therefore, that view comes into the mind, and then a response is triggered according to that stimulus. And then the switching of the light happens, and then the child perceives it. But then you look at this and then say that, okay, I told the child to switch off the light when he leaves the room, and now he switches it off all the time. See, what a good child. It is not the child's doing. It is the doing of all the views that he has. If on the other day he gets a view that you don't need to save energy to this world, maybe his friends tell him, you don't need to save energy to this world because everything is free in this world. So there's no problem in wasting it. That's how all the trends come into this world. Because it's just a view. When your child associates people of the same birds of a feather flock together, right? When your child associates people of the same mindset, same mentality, then they get views passed on. So therefore, the mind of that child gets different views. So in each single different situations, views come into place. Views are what triggers responses. Every response is triggered according to a view. When you walk into a shop, if someone's coming behind you, what do? You open the door and then you hold the door open for them. But when there's no one coming behind you, do you keep the door open or door held open? You don't. Why? Because at that time, that wasn't the stimulus. So therefore, when there's no one behind you, you don't have a view coming saying that you need to keep the door open. But if the stimulus is there's someone behind you, then there's a view that comes saying that you need to be, I mean, this you call it humanity, right? You call it helping. You call it kindness. So that view comes into your head saying that you need to keep the, you need to hold the door open to them. So that was driven by that view. Every action that happens in this world happens according to a view. And those views get changed all the time with associations, with what you see in the TV, with what you see around you, with what you hear. And also, with your own mental process, your views get updated. These are the three ways that you can get views. You can actually get views from hearing and seeing, but your views can get updated or they can change with your own mental process. By when you think. At the time of thinking, you can think to yourself. That is why you can actually think of the Dhamma and practice the path, because you're updating your own views. At first, you need a noble friend to put that seed into your head. That you get by hearing. So when you get that, then you can update it yourself. So just like AI, how do they work? So after an AI model is created, it goes through a process called learning. That's why it's called machine learning, because it's a machine which is learning. So it goes through a process called learning, where different stimuluses or different inputs are put into that AI, and then it learns it. It learns different patterns. It learns different calculations, and then it learns different probabilities and how these probabilities work and how common these probabilities are and all of those things. And it goes through this learning process. And it goes through this learning process, and then you have the good AI or a bad AI, whatever it is. So the AI that you use. And then the developers of that AI put certain restrictions to it, because otherwise, so it has to feed that as well, to be like a human. To have kindness, you have to tell it to be kind. Otherwise, it can do anything. It can provide you all sorts of answers. If you ask an AI how to steal this, then it can provide you 101 ways to steal it without noticing it. But now, because the developers have told it, saying that you have to be kind, and they have put the weave of kindness into AI. And therefore, it would come up saying that I can't provide you answers about this. If you ask an AI that I want a suicide, then it will reply. It will reply with all the things that will help you, and also it will reply with a mobile number that you can call to get counsel. So this is what happens in AI. I mean, when you think about it, isn't this the same thing? Although we say that this is me who's doing all of this, it's just processes that are triggering according to the stimulus that was received. You are AI. I mean, it should be like that, right? Because just think about it. Back then in the sense, like in the 2016s, 15s, or 14s. So when I was little, I could remember all the mobile numbers of my mother, father, and close relatives, because we memorized them, because at a time of an emergency, we didn't have a phone when we went to school. At a time of an emergency, we needed the mobile numbers, and then we needed a few, because if someone didn't answer, then we can try the other one all the time. Always we could try the other one. So back then we used to remember that. But now, if you ask a young child today whether they can remember the mobile numbers of their parents, at least 90% of the time they say no. Just think about it. When we think about the things that had happened in the past, when we think about Venerable Ananda, what is the capacity of memory that he had? How incredible it is. Just think about it. The Buddha had to just utter once. You have seen the stanzas and the suttas in the Tripitaka. The Buddha, Venerable Ananda didn't go ask Buddha, can you repeat it once more? Just one time. He didn't ask that. So Venerable Ananda just remembered it. It just went into his memory, and then he could recall it anytime he wanted. If you ask him the sutta that was given on this day, this time, and he would, okay, this is the sutta. Thus I have heard. And then he would start. Just think about it. It is incredible. I mean, that is the memory capacity of the people that lived back then. But what had happened to it today? We say that this world has the same amount of energy, right? It is the same amount of energy that balances throughout. So what is the capacity that keeps increasing today? Where is the memory capacity starts increasing today? Digital storage. So back then, people used a floppy disk, which can hold maybe 2 or 3 megabytes. But now it has turned into pen drives. And then came CD drives. And then came pen drives. And then came hard disks. And then came SSDs. And dot, 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 so on and so forth. Then came data centers. And then massive data storage. It keeps on increasing from gigabyte to megabyte to gigabyte to terabyte to petabyte and dot, dot, dot. So it keeps on increasing. What does that mean? What is happening to the memory capacity of people? Don't we see a reduction in that? Even if we take the very recent years, that is the best example that I took. The phone numbers of our parents. Simple instructions sometimes. Children tend to forget them. This day and age. So it is not their fault. It is how things evolve. When technology develops, what happens to humanity? What happens to the abilities of the human? It reduces because it is the same energy that gets transferred. It is the same capacity. So today we have to record a sermon. Why? Because there are no Venerable Anandas today. That's why we have to record a sermon today. Either audio or video. Because there are no Venerable Anandas today. So therefore, just think about it. That is just memory capacity. What about... What? So if memory is like that, what do you think about the development of AI? What is dropping? What are we going to miss? Intelligence. We'll see that in the future. Don't worry. What are we going to miss? We're going to miss intelligence. We'll see that in the future. So just think about it. When things in the world goes, when they disappear from the world, it does not actually disappear. It reappears in a different form. Intelligence appears in a different form. Just think about it. When you wanted to find something back then, what did you use? You went to the library. You read books. You asked people of knowledge. You asked people who has a huge knowledge. Who knew things. And then from that, you didn't only get the knowledge, did you? When you ask a teacher a question, you don't only get the answer to that. You get more than that. When you read a book, just think about simply reading a dictionary. When you wanted to find a word, you referred to the dictionary. Not the software, but the book. When you referred to the book, how many words did you find? Just one? Only that word? No, on the way, you found a few other words. A few other words clicked onto your head. Oh, this word looks interesting. And then you start looking on the definition of that. So you got more than that. But today, when you want to find a word, you ask Uncle Google. Or you ask Auntie Siri. You ask ChatGPT. You ask the AI. When you want to design a project, back then, you had to talk to lots of people. You have to put meetings with others and maybe the elderly who knew things, and then you have to complete that assignment, maybe even an assignment as well. You have to inquire other people. You have to ask them questions. But today, you just give it up to AI. And then it'll do the assignment. What do you learn out of it? You get a pass and a good grade, but you have learned nothing. But when you went to people, when you went to meet people, you learned humanity. You learned kindness there. You learned to give. That is what you learned. And therefore, because you got knowledge from someone else, you would always be willing to give someone else. But today, would it be like that? When people learn of AI, or people do assignments given to AI, would they be kind? Where do they learn them? Because it's just another view. Kindness is another view. Compassion is a view. Being a human is a view. Now can you see where this world is heading to? It is all cause and effect. Everything can be explained by cause and effect. It is all cause and effect. It started all the way back from the Brahma. And today, it is going all the way down and then to the destruction of this world. That is why it is said, we have heard that in the future, that there will be rains or showers of weapons. And then people would start seeing each other as animals. And then they would start killing each other for resources. They'll start hurting each other because they wouldn't have compassion inside them. Because their vexations would be very high. They couldn't bear anything. They wouldn't be able to bear anything inside them. Patience would be very low. Where does the low patience come from? When you wanted an answer to something, you have it instantly from AI. But back then, just think about your lives back then. When you wanted to know something, maybe you had to wait till you go to the school to ask the teacher. If your mom and dad doesn't know about it, you ask the question, and then you have to wait till you go to the school to ask the question. But today, you don't need to wait. So the patience drops. That's why sometimes these sermons don't give many views, because these are like 2 hours long. People can't wait that long to get what they need to get out of something. They need instant. They need 1 minute clips to get something out. If they're searching for something, some knowledge, they click on the shortest video. Why? Because they want the fastest way. They can't wait. But knowledge is not something like that. It is something that you acquire over time. Little by little, it gradually develops. Now, people want instant things these days. Very fast, very quickly. Why? Where did they come from? You can't blame AI. It's not its fault. It is slowly by slowly, little by little, people are losing their abilities. It's not instant. It's not spontaneous. It just happens gradually. That's why it is said that people start seeing each other as animals, because they can't be patient. They go to a shop and ask for something, and then if the shopkeeper says wait, then the shopkeeper will get a gunshot on his head. I mean, we hear these things these days as well. We hear these things. Why? Because they can't be patient. It is virtue. That virtue does not develop on the path of AI. That is not a fault AI, because it is not the fault of AI. It's just another view, that's why. So that's why it is said that people would start fighting each other. And it is said that the showers of weapons will happen, but this is not actually showers of weapon. It could even be the knowledge to make weapons. So when the knowledge, the technology develops, then the knowledge to make weapons will come into people's head. Just like the knowledge to make different technologies possible these days. So it is that knowledge that will come to people's head. So one day a knowledge came to a person, Sir Alfred Nobel. It came to him that to make TNT, dynamite. So he's known for it. But then he's also known for the Nobel Prize, because he got to know that his knowledge could be used to destruct this world, to cause massive destruction into this world. Therefore, he created the Nobel Prize Fund, which also gives a Nobel Prize for the peace. But that is, again, a knowledge that slowly developed over time, which today could cause a massive destruction. What about the nuclear bombs? That is also, again, a knowledge, a small piece of knowledge. But then when that knowledge was put into action, then it creates a shower of weapons. That's where you get missiles from. What about bullets? That's a shower of weapons. That's a shower of things that you that could hurt a person. A whole army. That's a shower of things that could take down a whole country. So the knowledge to make such weapons possible will come to people. So that is what will happen. So it is not ourselves, our job to predict about the future, but what I'm showing you is that this cause and effect, it all started from the Brahma and slowly descended down to this earth, and then all of this started happening. All of this started happening. And then it'll go to an end. That is why when the King Kosala back then, he saw 15 dreams. And then he wanted to interpret these dreams and then ask the Lord Buddha, what are the meanings of these dreams? And then the Lord Buddha explains these dreams to him. And many of those are happening today, this day and age. So some are yet to come in the future. Most of them are happening today. So what we need to understand is that every single instance that all the events that happens to a mind is caused by our own vipaka. No one is responsible for that. No one else is responsible for that. It is ourselves who are responsible for receiving our own vipaka. That is why, even though we have an aircon, unless we experience it, we are not actually drawing on our vipaka. Because an aircon being at our house, without we experiencing it, does not make us have vipaka to experience the aircon. Let's say the aircon is there, but it's broken. So we are not actually experiencing it. So, at the time of experience, we experience a stimulus that comes to the mind. And then that is registered, recognized, and then response happens, and then perceived. What we need to understand is that this mind, it's a good storyteller. It's a nice spider who weaves a web. It can weave a nice web to tell a nice story. Just think about it. You woke up in the morning. And then you brushed your teeth, you washed your face, you got dressed up, and then you left the house and you came to the monastery. And then you had, maybe you had breakfast at home, maybe you had breakfast here. And then you sat down in this hall, and then a Swaminarayana came inside and then he precepted you, and then the Swaminarayana left. The Swaminarayana worshipped the Buddha, and then the Swaminarayana left. And then the other Swaminarayana came in and then took the flowers and then offered the Buddha, worshipped the Buddha, and then sat down, and then he's doing the sermon right now. His mind is a very good storyteller. So we start feeling that we woke up in the morning, and then it is our decisions that brought us here, and then start to listen to the sermon. So we say that we are very meritorious because we get to listen to the sermon. We take that as a huge chunk. What if, let's say, you start listening to the sermon, right? The start. And then you get a call. So you have to leave the room. Okay, this part you didn't listen to the sermon. Let's say 5 minutes, you didn't listen to the sermon because you got a call. And then you come back. Again, you start. Again, you continue listening to the sermon. And then you fall asleep. Let's say 10 minutes you fall asleep, more than the call. So, so getting a call is better than that. Ask someone to call you next time. So, you fall asleep, and then again you wake up, and then you start listening to something, you continue it. And then you want to go to the washroom. 5 minutes there. So, we say that I got the chance to listen to the sermon because of my merits. And then, while listening to the sermon, you get other thoughts as well, don't you? So, you get other thoughts as well. So, what about those other thoughts? Maybe those are just like very, very quick thoughts, like small stuff. So you can't even see that there's a difference. But you get many other thoughts. You're sitting on you're sitting on the chair. You feel that. You feel the cold breeze of the aircon. You see the light. You see the decoration around me. You see the Swaminarayana, and that is not the sermon. So you see all of that. And then you smell the air. You taste the saliva in your mouth. Maybe if you drink water, then you taste that. So, throughout the sermon, you have all these lines breaking it down. So, is it that you got the chance to listen to the sermon because you have merits? Or, right now you have merits and therefore you are listening to this. This mind you are listening to this, and this mind interpreted it, this mind perceived it, and therefore you have merits. You can come into that conclusion. But you can't say collectively that you are listening to a sermon from the morning till 9:30. You can't say that because I have merits. But what about when you felt the chair? This is not the most comfiest chair that you can sit on. What if there's a headache? What if you have a back pain? Why do you relax your legs? Why do you straighten them and then bend them when they hurt? Is that merits? Physical pain, is it merits? No, it's not merits. So it's not all the merits that is coming when you listen to a sermon. So first you start leaning on the chair, and then you straighten your back after a while, and then you go to the side after a while, and then you go to the left after a while, and then you stretch after a while. All sorts of things I can see from here. So, is that your merits? You get physical pain all the time. Not that you get a headache or you get fever like that, but I mean, just sitting somewhere is just physical pain. Is that merits? I mean, we say that I'm doing a merit as well, right? But then how many times I had to go like this, and then I have to move on the chair? That is physical pain. I mean, just think about when you're offering flowers. You have to go and pluck the flowers in the early morning. And is that your merits? Because you have to experience that physically. That is not your merits. But to do merits, you have to pay off your demerits as well. That is what a life is. But the least amount that you pay the demerits, you call that life more meritorious. That is why human life is more meritorious than an animal's life. Because they have to pay a lot of demerits to earn just a bit of merits of their, to reap the results of their merits. To reap the good part of their karma record book. They have to spend a lot of demerits. Just think about it, lion or a cheetah. How fast do they have to run to eat? They have to run very fast. They have to spend a lot of energy. And they're tired after that. But they do that. They pay off a lot of demerits, and then they get the food. They kill the animal, and then they eat. That's when they earn merit. That's when they not earn merits, but that's when they eat. That's when they reap the result of their merits, and they get food. But what if that food is not enough? Not salt enough? Can they put salt? No, they have to eat it as raw. I mean, they don't complain. They can't complain. They just eat it. So they have to pay a lot of demerits than humans to reap the results of their merits. But what about the beings in the other hells? Other, let's say, fiery hells? They don't experience merits at all. Because they are born in the fire, and all their lives they live in the fire. So that is not merits. That is always demerits. So they are paying off their demerits that they have collected throughout their life as a human. What about the devas? So for we say that to travel we need money, right? What if a deva wants to come to Sri Lanka? What flight do they take? Sri Lankan Airlines? Or Qatar Airways? Emirates or Etihad? Which one do they take? They don't take that. They just think of it, and then the next instance, they're here. They have to just think of it. That is their merits. But for us to travel, we have to pay off a little bit of demerits as well. You have to get up and then get into a car, and then maybe if it's a taxi, we need to pay, and then to pay again, we need to earn the money and dot, 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 dot. But if it's a car, then we have to get into it, and then we have to ride it. So for that, we say that riding for our travel, let's call it merits. We get the transport, but for all that, we need to pay a little bit of demerits. But for the Deva, he just needs to think of it, and then he's here. What about food? Again, we need to do all the things where we could have just taken off the ground, but today we have to do all the things and then cook, prepare it, and then eat it. What about the Devas? They just need to think of it, and then it is right in front of them. The ambrosia and nectar. It is just right in front of them, when they just think of it. And there is another Deva world, which is it's called the Paranimitta Vasavartya, where they say that they have the most amount of merits, where they have done spontaneous merits, where no one actually thinks of doing it. So for example, let's say there is there's something fallen on the ground. Everyone just skips over it. No one just thinks of it. But then this man, he thinks of it, and then he thinks of others, that let's say there is a rock on the road, on the street. And then he thinks of all the other people. So if you see a rock on the street, maybe you take it away today. But most of the time people just go around it. Or if there's a branch fallen onto the road, people go around it. But this man, he thought of all the others and then took it off the road. This thought came to him spontaneously. Then and there. He wasn't planning to do it. These sort of merits will give the birth in a place like the Paranimitta Vasavartya, which is their world where you get things spontaneously. Whenever you need them, it's just there. It just conjures in front of you. So that is the power of merits. So what did they need to do? Did they go to a job? Did the Devas educate themselves? They didn't do any of those. But when they needed things, it is just in front of them. It is their merits. So at every single time, what we need to understand is that it is merits that is causing that mind. And it is demerits that is causing that mind. But when you think about the things that we had done from the morning to now, then this mind creates a big story. Let's just think about it. Someone scolds you. Someone yells at you for something that you have done wrong. And then what happens? You get angry. You get sad. You grieve over it. And then the next day you see them again. You grieve over it. You get sad. Again the next day you see them. You get sad. But it's just at that time you need to understand that it is those minds that brought you demerits that you've done. We need to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that every single event that happens in this world is discrete. It is a mind. This mind. And this mind. And this mind. And this mind. It is all due to the vipaka that we have collected. It is all due to the vipaka that is in our karma record book. Every single time a mind is arisen, according to the vipaka, according to the environment, a vipaka comes into fruition. That's why we don't get the vipaka or the physical pain that an animal might experience. Because we don't have those vipaka coming to us today because we don't have the environment for it. So therefore, if there's the environment, and then this environment restricts certain set of vipakas to come into fruition right now, which is what we call the environment. And then always the environment keeps on fine-tuning to a single vipaka. We should come right now. So that is what you call the environment. So for example, right now, you can't get the vipaka to hear the news or music. Because You have that environment around you, but that environment has been fine-tuned to a certain set of vipakas that should come right now. And then, in every single mind, that environment gets fine-tuned to just one vipaka. And that is the experience of that mind. That is what creates that mind, that certain vipaka. So when the environment fine-tunes into one vipaka, that is the vipaka that is drawn to create that mind. When that mind is created, we call that an experience. That is an incident, and that is one experience that we experience. So every single time, so let's say someone starts yelling at you. There's this person. Can you all see this? This is you. He starts yelling at you. He starts yelling at you. And then, when he started yelling at you, there was an environment. According to that environment, this is your karma record book. This is his karma record book. According to that environment, where did you get the yelling from? Here or here? Here. What do you feel? We got it from here. Then, according to our mentality at that time, we fine-tune the environment, don't we? If we get angry, then we fine-tune it to draw more from this. No, not from this, sorry. This. We fine-tune it to draw more from it. More bad things from it. So this is good. This is bad. So we fine-tune it to draw from this side. Let's say we say something back at them. Now comes from here. Let's say we keep ourselves shut. So what happens? It comes from here, comes from here, comes from here, and then it fades out. And then again starts coming from here. Let's say we leave that place. So when he's yelling, we just leave. Again, comes from here, and then from here. So we fine-tune that environment, don't we? Again, that is according to the views. If the view of compassion is there, then we fine-tune it to keep ourselves shut. If the view is that when someone yells at me, I'm not being second to anyone. I'll say a thing or two back at them, Swaminathan. If that is the view that you have here, that is the response that will take place. It is not you doing anything. It is a view that is causing that response. When that stimulus is triggered, it is registered, it is recognized as a yell, and then when there's a yell or when you're getting a go at, then there's a view saying that I should keep shut or I should yell back at them. If that is the view, then that is the response. If the view is compassion, then keep yourself shut or leave that place. So according to the view, a response is triggered. And then when everything has happened, perception happens. And then you think that it is me who did that and it is them who blamed me. When that perception happens, again, the environment is fine-tuned. Because that updates the views again. That updates it. Then it triggers the next mind. It leaves an environment for the next mind to arise. It creates the environment. It influences the next environment. And therefore, the next thought will arise. Or the next, you will hear the next words. And again, where does that come from? Here or here? Here. then you'll hear the blaming again. But every single word that you heard, every single word that you heard is discrete. Every single mind that were born here is discrete. That mind didn't have to do anything with the next mind. It is discrete. This whole event is discrete to the other events in your life. This is a discrete event. Every single mind is discrete. It has its own causes, it has its own environment. And when the environment and the causes, all of those are present, then you have the effect. Can you change it? But why are we blaming back at them? To try to change it. But now we know that everything has happened when we perceive it. There's no point in changing anything. We can't change what we have already heard. We can't change what has already happened. We can't change this world. Why? Because we perceive after everything has happened. That is why it is said that the I and the Rupa, the I and the Rupa is a precursor. But the I consciousness, it happens after that. It is a precursor to the I consciousness, I and the Rupa. I and the Rupa is always a precursor to the I consciousness. So I and the Rupa already had happened when the I consciousness comes into play. When the perception comes into, when you become conscious about that stimulus, everything has happened. A response has already been triggered. You don't have to do anything. So that's why it is said that you can't do anything in this world. The only thing that you can do, that is again, you can't do, but the only thing that you can do is to keep yourself in a noble environment. Because now you see that these responses are triggered by the views that are in the mind. Where do you get those views from? Noble association or an association. You get any sort of views from association, from the eye and hearing. And then also from your thoughts, but then if you're in a noble association, your thoughts will arise according to them. Therefore, your thoughts will be noble. So it is always according to your association that you respond. Perception is just optional. Although you perceive or not, the response and the recognition and the registering and the receiving all of them have happened. Perception is just optional. It's not optional, that happens in the mind, but it is very optional. It is a very useless thing that happens in this world. When you think about it, then you start to feel how useless it is. Perception. Because you don't need it. Because everything happens without it. You don't need perception. Because everything has happened. Even the trigger or the next mind or the environment of the next mind has been influenced by the views. So when response happens, it is said that energy is released to three places, to the environment and to the mind and to this. So to the karma record book, which is your karma, and then to the environment, and then to the body. So when that happens, that is what creates the environment. That is what creates attraction in the environment. Because that is the only force that the mind can actually release to this world. Attraction. That's why two particles get attracted. It is that energy. never are two particles collide with each other, because they can't. Although this so we learned that the three states of mass. This is gas. And then they are closer to each other. This is liquid. And then they are very close. This is solid, but they're not actually touching each other. Even though you glue two things together, it's not touching each other. So you can pressure your thumb and your index together as much as possible, but they're not touching each other. We feel that they are touching each other because of the pressure sensors, the pressure receptors that are here. But if you take a microscope and check, they're not touching each other. Two atoms can't touch each other. They're not touching. So it is the attraction force. So mainly the attraction force is released by your mind. So that is why it creates different things in this world. Because it doesn't actually create different things, it releases the attraction forces that are required to bring things together, bring chaos into order. That's when different orders of things that you see in this world happens. Because the mind releases energy to bring chaos into order. That is all the mind can do. So the mind actually experiences an event and then processes it according to it and then does everything, even bring chaos into order, release energy to this body for it to function, and that is this response. Let's say you get angry and then you beat this person, you slap this person. That is again triggered by the mind according to a view. If I get yelled, I have to slap. That is the view. And then the next set of minds will keep on releasing energy for that. And that is the response. That is what goes to the brain. That is the message that goes to the brain. And then the brain controls the body. You can never lift your arm. You can only instruct the brain to lift your arm. What if you're paralyzed from here downwards? Then you can't lift your arm. So there's a very famous experiment called the rubber hand experiment. Now there are three videos. So the rubber hand experiment, where they put two hands, so they put a rubber hand, and then your right hand, this is your right hand, and then this is the rubber hand. This is visible by you, right? And then your actual left hand is hidden from you on the side. Right? Your actual left hand is hidden. This is your right hand. This is your rubber hand. This is your actual left hand. It is hidden. So your connection between the rubber hand and to show that you don't have a connection between the rubber hand and you, that is also hidden by a piece of cloth. So then what they do is they call this the connection of the connecting the perceptions. So what they do is they take a feather and then rub this hand just as the same way as your real left hand. So they try to connect the perceptions. That's what they say. So they rub it and the same way, and if it's on your, if they're rubbing the feather on your index finger, they're rubbing the index finger of the real left hand as well as the rubber hand. So they keep on doing that for a while, and then with another thing, maybe a pencil or something, and then they keep on doing that for a while, and then they take a hammer and hit the rubber hand. And this person really feels, he gets scared when they're doing that to their other hand. So it is the perception. It's just that perceived by seeing. You didn't feel. You get scared that something will happen to you and this thing is me. But that is the rubber. That was perceived as your as part of your body. But that's just rubber. What do you think? It's just rubber and you start perceiving it as yourself. What do you really perceive as yourself? It's just like rubber. It's meat. It's flesh as you perceive as yourself. So this is not weird to be scared when he's hitting with a hammer to your rubber hand. Of course, you get physical pain if he really hits your flesh hand. But apart from that, this is perception by seeing. This is not what you feel through receptors. They connected it through the receptors, they say. They connected the perceptions. But why do you get scared of a hammer? Because you feel that it is going to hit my arm. It is going to hit my hand. Which is a rubber hand. So, now we understand that it is just a perception that happens every single time. And that perception happens after all the things in the process of the mind has taken place. So, it's just like getting to know something after everything has happened. Everything has happened and you just get to know it. Then you wander around thinking that, why did I get to know it in the first place? Because I can't do anything. If you can't do anything to change something, then why do you need to get known about it? Why do you need to know it if you can't do anything about it? It's just like that. It's just like your house is stolen. It is robbed. But let's say you can't do anything about it. Oh, why do you get to know about it in the first place? If you can't do anything about it, but of course you can call the police and stuff like that and investigations and all that. But if you can't do anything about it, and if nothing happens, if you do anything about it. So we feel that if we respond in a way to break this, in the sense that we yell back at them, then that is something doing, and that is something that we are doing about this, right? Because we feel that this is a whole event that is happening. Like you listen to the sermon, the whole package. We tend to perceive it that way, but Is it like that? We feel that we're doing something about it, but unfortunately, when we yell back at them, what are we doing? Is it this way? Or is it this way? It is this way. So, are we actually doing something about it? Or are we making another one to come back to us? See, that is what happens when perception takes place. We feel that we can do something about it because we were the ones who went through that experience. Therefore, we do something about it and then actually create something again to come back to us. The same experience to come back to us. That's what we do. That is what happens because of perception. We create another experience. We create another vipaka for us to experience. Now we feel that, I yelled at them. And then they get one from here. Because there's an environment now for this to attract when you start yelling at them. So it's just creating vipaka and experiencing them individually, and they're all discrete in every single mind. That is why it said, Sabbe sankara anicchati yada panyaya passati atha nibbidnite dukke esa maggo visuddhiya. This is sabbe sankara. The formation of this mind, it is anicca. It is according to causes, it's cause and effect. Sabbe sankara anicchati. But if you fail to see that, then you feel that sabbe sankara nichyati. So it is me who is doing it. So it is this person who is yelling at me, and then I have to yell back at them. But if you see sabbe sankara anichyati, then you see it is just cause and effect taking place, and discrete minds forming is what happens in this world. So if sabbe sankara anichyati, then next comes the next line, yada panyaya passati. See that with your wisdom, because you can't experience it. You can't experience anicca. You can see it through wisdom. Yada panyaya passati. If you see it through wisdom, atanibbindite dukke, then the jati stops happening for that time. Esa maggo visuddhiya, that is the path to purification. So the more you see it, you wouldn't blame at them. You would keep yourself shut. Because you see that it is your own vipaka that have been drawn, not this guy blaming at you. There's a reason why the Buddha had said the sabbe sankara anicchati, and then sabbe sankara dukkati, and then sabbe dhamma anattati. There's a reason why the Buddha had said that. Because sankara is something that sankara is formations. So formation is anicca, because it is chaos. For a formation, you need chaos. And then sabbe sankara dukkati. Chaos can be set into order. That is done by formations. So for formation, you can explain formations using anicca and dukkha. But what about dhamma? Dhamma are things that we feel that exist. They can be only explained by anatta, which is that you can't separate them. They are not entities that exist in this world. So they are inseparable. They are anatta. That is why it is explained sabbe sankara as dukkha and anicca, but then sabbe dhamma as anatta. So we'll explain more of this next week, as the time that has been given to us is finished, and the Yanagarika Mahatyas are blaming me. So we'll transfer the merits and conclude the sermon. Always keep in your mind that every single time discrete events that are taking place in your head, not in your head, but as experience. Every experience is discrete. So it is not you coming to the sermon, you waking up, it is not the same you that is. So it is not the merits that you have earned that kept you throughout this sermon. It is the merit that gave rise to that mind. That is why throughout the sermon, you get other thoughts, you get the feeling that you're on a chair, and you experience the aircon, you see the Swaminarayan say, that is not the sermon, and you see all of that. But again, to see a Swaminarayan say, we have heard that it is also merits. Because this sight of a Swaminarayan say, it's very rare. Although we feel that it is very common these days, it is very common if you come to the monastery every single day, that is your merits. How many people do you think there are in this world who can't even see a Swaminarayan say? And what about a time where there isn't a Buddha? There isn't a Sambuddha Sasane? Those are the times that have been more in this world. But because we live in a time where the Sambuddha Sasane is there, we feel that it is very common. It's a very common sight. But when the Sambuddha Sasane is not there, those are the times that have been the most in this world. Those are the periods of time that has been most in this world. Those are the most common times where Sambuddha Sasane is not there. But we are so lucky that even in this kalpa, four Buddhas have come to this world. Fifth one is yet to come. Five Buddhas, just think about it. In one single kalpa, five Buddhas, in one single yon, five Buddhas. Just think how meritorious this whole kalpa is. Okay, so we'll transfer the merits and conclude the sermon for today. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits you have acquired throughout the day by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, observing the precepts and engaging in various meritorious deeds throughout the day. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings, and with immense gratitude let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Lord Buddha and have passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage, as in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves to the benefit of all sentient beings. Let's not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in our local temples and nunneries who have always been by our side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our teacher, Guru Swami Nahansa, and all the other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who take great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Lord Buddha, be that by sharing these sermons with others or uniting others to join them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devotees, friends of the monastery, for the sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, and those of you who have provided the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, and those of you who have provided their know-how and extended their well-wishes. May by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments, overcome any obstacles to our spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers, fathers, brothers and sisters, our uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, and to anyone and everyone who has helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. And by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments, overcome any obstacles to spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devas, brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasane. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our guardian deities who keep watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. By the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our ancestors who have preceded us, to all who have been our friends, families and acquaintances in this infinite long journey of samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits to them. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this infinite long journey of samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits to them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all make a resolve that may, by the power and blessings of all the merits you have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And may, by the power and blessings of all the merits you have acquired throughout the day and throughout our whole samsara, may you and I, and everyone who has helped make these programs a success, become an arahant nuhanse or an arahant many nuhanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Now the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnen midatnva Dvesha ginnen midatnva Moha ginnen midatnva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukheta taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukheta taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnayo Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva
Tunruange Suvisyananta Mahaguna Velen Siruloka Siru Satyoma Nibbana Parama Sukhen Sukita Taravetva Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Turun sana.